It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Matea, reminding you that this show cannot be made without you. If you've been thinking about becoming a Canada Land supporter, we're having a pretty great sale right now. You'll get premium ad-free feeds of all Canada Land shows, discounts on merch from our store, and exclusive bonus episodes, like a behind-the-scenes tour of the federal budget lockup, more of Boris Johnson's trip to Canada, and of course, more of us yapping about what's hot in politics right now. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a Canada Land supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special offer for our listeners. Sign up now for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today.
This episode of Oppo is brought to you in part by FreshBooks. Hey, are you using FreshBooks yet? Why not? I've been telling you about this for a while now. You can use FreshBooks to track your time, send beautiful-looking invoices, get paid faster, and it's so dang easy to use for small businesses and freelancers. If you don't believe me, you can try it yourself, free, for 30 days. Just go to FreshBooks.com/Oppo and enter OPPO in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's FreshBooks.com/Oppo and enter Oppo.
This episode is also brought to you by Audible. Audible has the best audiobook performances, the largest library, and the most exclusive content curated by and for Canadians. Start a 30-day trial and your first Audible book is free. Learn more at audible.ca/Canada. That's audible.ca/CANADA.
From Canada Land, this is Oppo.
I'm Jen Gerson, boring wife and mommy proud.
And I'm Justin Ling, Irish proud.
Today, it's a sheer survivorship extravaganza. We have on a very special guest who wants to take the conservative leader out.
We've also got the latest on what's going down in the Wild West. And finally, I have some thoughtful thoughts on Hong Kong. All right, listeners, as you know, we now have a recurring segment called Jen Gerson's Western. By Western, we mostly mean Alberta, Saskatchewan, though in this case, Manitoba. Alienation Corner. So, Jen, what's going on in the West?
Brian Pallister, the premier who we very rarely hear about from Manitoba, especially as he's not often back in the province from his vacation home in Costa Rica. Well, he is getting into this amazing fight over Bill 21, the Quebec secularism bill that would forbid public servants from wearing religious garb. Pallister launched an actual ad campaign to encourage religious minorities who are disillusioned by the law to move to Manitoba.
And Manitobans expect us to stand up for human rights. We're saying, you know, frankly, we just don't believe this is healthy or good for Canada's reputation, for the minorities within Quebec, for Quebec itself, quite frankly.
And this has sparked a hilarious fight with the interim leader of the Parti Québécois, who has invoked the 1885 hanging of Louis Riel as evidence that the province has no business messing in Quebec for its controversial law.
Obviously, the Quebec premier thinks differently than I. He says it's a popular measure. I think it's a dangerous measure. We agree to disagree. And I respect and like the premier, but I do not like this legislative proposal. I do not think it is a good thing. And I would hope others would stand up and say what they think.
I thought that this was just absolutely hilarious. And I have to admit that I'm really enjoying Brian Pallister more and more. I got to do a profile of him in Maclean's a little while ago. And like, I really enjoyed it, but he's an odd duck. Like, he's a really odd guy.
He strikes me as a little frumpy, a little kind of like dour. I don't know. I kind
of
like it.
He's actually got like a really kind of dark sense of humor, actually. He's really funny. But he's rapidly, I think, emerging as the go-to centrist conservative in this country. If you want like a pretty sensible conservative guy who will come around on the issues and, you know, he'll get around to it and he'll plod along, it's kind of Brian Pallister now. So I'm really enjoying some of the stuff that's going on in Manitoba.
Yeah, to say nothing about his domestic record in Manitoba, he's a nice counterweight to Scott Moe and Jason Kenney. It's not just Quebec bashing. He's legitimately calling out Quebec for a truly racist piece of legislation. I'm here for it.
Well, and he's also being opportunistic too, which we saw also Nenshi do when Quebec's tried stuff like this before. It's like, okay, you don't want to be discriminated against in Quebec? Come to the West. I kind of love it.
Good job, Brian Pallister.
Good job, Brian Pallister.
This episode is brought to you by FreshBooks. Accounting tasks are a waste of time, and they're not fun, and they're annoying. Some places have entire departments just to handle accounting. They're called accounting departments. And it's not that difficult, but it is very time-consuming and very annoying. I hate keeping receipts. I hate having to sift through spreadsheets that I've forgotten about and that are formatted terribly. It just takes away so much time from doing stuff that I actually enjoy doing and which actually makes me money. Well, if you're using FreshBooks accounting software, you could be saving up to 192 hours a year. It just makes taking care of your books that much easier. Since I've started using it, I found I've just shaved time off of doing so many things. My invoices look good, they get sent out faster, the reminders can be automatic, I don't have to spend a whole bunch of time going back through my old emails to figure out how much I charged for something. Everything is right there, it's easily searchable, it's easily sortable, you can spit out reports. It is fantastic. And you know what? It means you get paid faster. So you get more money in your bank sooner and you can spend it, which is good. Listeners like you can try FreshBooks free for 30 days. All you have to do is go to FreshBooks.com/OPPO and enter OPPO in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's FreshBooks.com/OPPO and enter OPPO.
Today on OPPO, we have a special guest, villain of the progressive left, aspiring kingmaker of the conservative right. Jeff Ballingall is with us in studio to discuss his plans to oust Andrew Scheer.
Ballingall is the man behind the infamous Facebook group known as Ontario Proud. Ontario Proud has branched out across the country since claiming a slice of Doug Ford's win in Ontario in 2018. And if you haven't actually seen any of their memes, Ontario Proud, Canada Proud, and all of their provincial subsidiaries are basically conservative meme pages dedicated, above all else, to taking down the Liberal Party in all of its forms. Based on what we know about Ontario Proud's financing, they are predominantly funded by a handful of real estate developers, as well as a whole bunch of small donations from fans and supporters. While he says the Proud Network will remain neutral in the coming Conservative Leadership Review, he has joined with Corey Tenaik to form Conservative Victory, a PAC devoted to ousting Scheer. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so looking forward to all of the Twitter backlash the second that your name is actually announced on this show. It's going to be great. So, Jeff, I have to start with this question. Why are you the guy to oust Scheer? Aren't you just a dude who shitposts memes on Facebook?
Yeah, well, that's what my detractors will say. But I think I'm good at digital media, and I think our team has a good approach. And I think I have a valuable insight into how to appeal to a broad sector of the Canadian public online. And I think the Conservative Party needs to do a better job at appealing to people and using new media. And so when Corey approached me and asked me if I wanted to be part of his new venture, I was happy to join.
A lot of people actually said that a minority Liberal government would be a win for the Conservative Party, that if Andrew Scheer took away Trudeau's majority, that would be a win and there wouldn't be a rush to get rid of him. What changed?
Well, and I probably would have sided with you after the election, but what happened after the election is that Andrew Scheer came out and tried to claim some big moral victory, and then he doubled down on all his awful things he was saying about gay rights and social issues that we should not be discussing in that fashion. And then he didn't show any plan to beat Trudeau, with no passion, no conviction. So, you know, as I said to the Globe and Mail, his election performance was disappointing, but his post-election performance was abysmal. And he left of this big leadership vacuum, and he played to all the worst instincts that conservatives had about him.
Because, Jeff, I want to get into why you're pissed off at Scheer. But first, I just want to ask, so you and Corey, why did Corey approach you? You guys go back to, like, the Sun News together, right?
It actually predates that. I worked for Corey at the Conservative Research Resource Group at on Parliament Hill. He was my first real boss.
And my other question is, you know, if Ontario Proud is so influential, you know, and if you have such a keen grasp of how to mobilize Canadians and how to use digital, then how come you guys weren't able to mobilize voters in the last election in the 905, which is largely where the Conservatives needed to win?
Well, I think we did a good job at attacking Trudeau. I think Canada Proud did a very good job at trying to get the Liberals off message, trying to use blackface and all the other scandals against the Liberals. But I don't. I think ultimately that's a part of a campaign. We're a third party. We are not the campaign. And so if you run a if the leader runs a crappy campaign, if Canadians can't connect with a Conservative leader, then it's going to be really hard to win an election. And I think we saw the limits of that. I think going into the campaign, I had big questions about the ability to win the election based on just Trudeau's negatives. Can the Conservatives win just on people not liking Trudeau? And I think we learned, one, Canadians are going to look to the next prime minister and see if they like the guy or girl. And number two, I think one of the reasons the campaign failed is that the Conservatives didn't do a good enough job prosecuting the Liberals. And that really showed in the last week of the campaign, where they started talking about a majority government. They had, you know, Andrew Scheer's face above the Gardner in Toronto, and they made it all about the Conservatives, when the election should always have been, if that was their playbook, they should have stayed true to that play and made the election all about Trudeau and not started talking about Andrew Scheer, majority government.
The Conservative campaign didn't look all that different from Ontario/Canada Proud's campaign, right? I mean, you guys both focused heavily on the carbon tax doesn't work, the tax grab, yada, yada, yada. You focused heavily on blackface and Cincy-Lavalin, a handful of other things. There's a lot of overlap in the Conservative campaign and the third party campaign that you guys are running. Is it a bit odd to go back and say the Conservative campaign was shit when it looked an awful lot like yours?
No, because I disagree with the premise of your question. I think our ads were funnier, were lighter. We didn't attack... Andrew Scheer's response to blackface was kind of empty, where we just made it listen. Like, no one actually thinks Justin Trudeau's racist, but what he is he's a hypocrite and he's an embarrassment to Canada. That's how we played blackface. I don't think Scheer really did that as much. And I think ultimately... Scheer was just not an authentic or entertaining or accessible speaker. I mean, you don't want to listen to the guy because he's so boring and he's so lifeless and he doesn't actually seem to believe in what he's saying. He's just mouthing words. And so how can anyone connect with someone that doesn't really show empathy? And so, yes, we had a role to play in the campaign, but we can't win a campaign. You can't win a campaign on a third party on itself.
You know, with the benefit of hindsight, how should the Conservatives have run that election campaign, according to you?
I just think you need a leader that shows empathy. I think you need that Bill Clinton 1992 campaign moment where it's, I feel your pain. You need someone that just seems relatively normal. And when we're talking about not being able to march in gay pride parades in 2019, that's not normal. That's not the Canada that the Canadians want anymore. If someone told you at a party that they had a problem with gay pride parades or seemed weird about the gay issue, you would not really be their friend. I don't think you'd want to hang out with that person. You wouldn't be able to relate to them. And ultimately, that's kind of what happened to Andrew Scheer. It's hard to relate to a guy where on big key questions about his faith and views on social issues, you just feel weirded out by.
And I'm just going to segue here because his deputy leader, Leona Alislev, got into a gaffe basically right out of the gate with her comments about the gay pride stuff. She said, this is a quote, "I think that that's obviously his choice, and we live in a country where that's his choice. Have we asked anybody if they've marched in a St. Patrick's Day parade?" I mean, this was supposed to be the person they brought in to help Scheer deal with these sorts of contentious issues. And that is probably the dumbest non sequitur I've heard yet coming from the Conservative Party on the file.
Yeah, yeah, Jeff. I mean, honestly, what's your problem with the Irish?
My friend Jamie Ellerton, who was on the Scheer campaign team and is gay, had a great tweet thread about this issue. He had a litany of all the times that Andrew Scheer went to or celebrated different holidays or ethnic events, whether it's St. Patrick's Day or a Filipino bake sale. I mean, you name it, Scheer's done it. And that's the point, is that if you want to be prime minister, you have to do these events. You have to find a way to represent different Canadians. And sorry, dude, you got to do it. It's part of your job.
So tell me, Jeff, what do you think that Conservative victory is going to do? Like, as a PAC, what power do you have other than your ability to sort of place Google ads? Like, what are you going to do? What's the strategy?
Well, obviously, it's about persuasion. And we want to pressure Andrew Scheer to quit before Christmas. But we also are hiring organizers and working with conservative activists across the country to make sure that we can influence delegate selection meetings and get people to the convention if it goes that far in April.
Are you optimistic that Scheer is going to resign before Christmas? I mean, you know, like reading the tea leaves, his caucus is still mostly united. Ed Fast has recently come out and saying he doesn't want a shadow cabinet post because he doesn't trust the leader. But mostly people have kept their heads down. You know, no one's actually sort of challenged him for the leadership. You know, yourself, Corey Tenagan, and some others have openly been hostile and criticized his leadership. But most of you aren't within the party structure anymore. Would it take someone inside the party to actually sort of stab him in the back for this to work?
I think it's a lot more challenging if you're a member of caucus. You don't want to be seen as disloyal. And I think this actually has to be member driven. I don't think caucus can lead it on its own. I think you need a multitude of voices, whether it's in caucus or outside of caucus, pushing for this. And hopefully we'll get there. But I've spoken to caucus members privately, and they are quite frustrated and want to see Scheer gone, but they know that they can't be the one putting their knives in his back. And so I think Scheer will ultimately resign. I think the man has a problem with making decisions or having any passion. He honestly acts like he doesn't want the job. And so maybe we'll see him make the decision. Maybe we won't. But I think we're ultimately going to see more and more people come out and ask Andrew to do the right thing.
But Jeff, I also just want to ask specifically about Conservative victory. I know there's a lot of controversy about how the Ontario Proud Network gets funded. How is this PAC getting funded?
We have donors coming to us from across Canada right now. We're continuing to fundraise. And so I'm not leading that effort. I honestly am not the best person to speak to that. I'm sure we're going to get a lot more money as things evolve.
I mean, this doesn't seem like it's a grassroots, you know, you're funding this on, you know, $5 donations apiece. This is obviously fairly large donors to get this up and running.
Sure. But there were tons of people who were left on the sidelines in the Conservative movement the last few years that want to get involved and are sick of the party acting like it's still stuck in 2004. And we need different people doing different things, and fundraising and donors is one of them.
I've heard rumors that, for example, that like the dairy cartel is going to be stacking the EDAs in April to try and protect Scheer. I mean, surely there's got to be a strategy just beyond sort of digital persuasion to get him out.
Yeah, as I said, we're talking to conservative activists and making sure that we're going to be influencing delegate selection meetings, and we're getting people involved, and we're going to be helping people get to Toronto for the convention and make sure that the votes go according to plan. But at this stage, I don't see, maybe this is overly optimistic on my part, but I don't see Andrew Scheer getting 70% in a review. If it goes to April, it's going to be hard. But I mean, we can't rest on those laurels. We have to make sure that we're doing everything we can to persuade conservative members and get and influence these delegate selection meetings.
Isn't it a bit odd that, you know, there's this criminology happening? I mean, you know, if what we're hearing is true, the dairy farmers are out there, you know, stacking EDAs in favor of Scheer. If some other rumors are true, you know, the lobby groups who are somewhat less fond of Scheer are the ones doing the organizing on the other side, helping you guys out with money, you know, maybe helping you out with their member drives and all that. You know, the cattle ranchers of Canada who are no big fans of supply management and therefore no big fans of Andrew Scheer. I don't know, Big Gay, is that a lobby that is helping you guys? I mean, is it kind of incumbent on both sides to sort of be transparent about who's actually running the campaigns behind the scenes here?
Yeah, I guess that's a fair concern. I honestly haven't heard any of these rumors. I can't speak to them. But maybe Big Gay is.
No, but I mean, you're at least involved with a movement that could be the front for some of that. I mean, is this kind of where we're at in Canadian politics, where it's now very possible to run these sort of shadow campaigns without anyone really knowing?
Oh.
Especially with, you know better than anybody that third-party financing rules are very opaque if we're not in a campaign period.
Yeah, and that's true. That's a concern that people that's a fair concern that people might have.
Kind of to that point, I mean, it seems like some of the most vocal anti-Scheer critics are coming out of Ontario, they're coming out of Toronto, and they seem to be connected to the Ford for lack of a better term, faction. And that's pretty understandable, considering the giant rumor was that Ford was enormously pissed off because he was sidelined in the last election. So are you kind of in with the Fordite faction? I mean, is that the deal now?
No, not at all. I'm an element of it. I mean, people are also saying that we're the Bernier faction too, because some of our core was involved in the Bernier campaign. I think the people we're reaching and the people who I believe are donating to us are from a big cross section who just don't want to see Justin Trudeau win again, who are very concerned that if Scheer continues, Trudeau is going to win a majority government and continue to harm Canada. And that's what people are really angry about, and that's what people are motivated by.
Is there anything Scheer could do to convince those people that he can do better in the next election, or is it too late for him?
I think it's too late now. I mean, he had an opportunity on October 22nd to start making phone calls, to showcase that he had some sort of plan, showcase some sort of contrition, and he did none of those things. And
he has fired Hamish Marshall. He's fired Brock Harrison. You know, he's clearly cleaning house and getting new people in there.
Well, he didn't renew Hamish Marshall's contract. Hamish Marshall's contract came to its end, is what he would say.
Well, yeah.
I know.
And, you know, casting aside Brock and Marc-André a month after the fact, I mean, you can't just do that. He didn't have a replacement. When you fire someone in politics, you talk about the people you're hiring, not the people that you're firing.
Yeah.
And Scheer doesn't get that.
You've talked to people in caucus. What's your read? I mean, we know that it went to a vote, you know, in a caucus meeting. We know that Scheer survived the vote. What's your impression of how the caucus is split?
I don't think Scheer actually has a lot of friends. I think his appointment of Leuna as deputy must have rattled a lot of people.
Yeah, of course, she's a floor crosser. Yes, she's from around the GTA, but so is Diane Finley, you know, someone who actually has, you know, connections in the party.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to, it reminds people like me that we lost Lisa Raitt's seat. I mean, that's pathetic. That should have been an easy seat for us. And now the Conservative caucus is without one of its best players. We need Lisa, and we need more people like her, not fewer.
And of course, famously, you know, the Conservatives did elect a gay MP. I mean, even...
And he didn't make shadow cabinet.
Yeah, I mean, does that not strike you as a bit of a cock-up, for lack of a better word?
Of course it does. We need to do a better job appealing to more Canadians. And finally, we have an open gay MP who's really qualified. I don't know the guy, but I've heard good things. And very qualified, young, dynamic, and... you know, involved in shadow cabinet. Like, it's insane.
Okay, but here's my big concern with all of this, is that it seems a bit naive to assume that by kicking out Scheer, you're going to get some better option who's more big tent, who's more gay friendly, who's more all of these things that you want, all of the things that the 905 wants. I mean, isn't it more probable that you're just going to wind up with some total populist style windbag, another demagogue style person?
Or you get Peter McKay.
I don't know, but I think what we need to do is clear the path. And I think, unlike last leadership race, where it seemed like Justin Trudeau was in for the long term, we didn't have the best field of candidates last time. And I think people, the only other candidate I think could run again this time would be O'Toole, and he's certainly improved since 2015, and he's raised his profile. He's a hard worker. But I think we're also going to get lots of other great candidates. And the example I've been giving to people about the kind of potential candidate we could get is if we look to the Democrats in the States and Pete Buttigieg. This guy has pretty much an unpronounceable last name to a lot of people. He's gay. He's from a small town in Indiana. And now he's within striking distance of winning Iowa and New Hampshire. And he's taking on, you know, Obama's vice president.
So the strategy is here, you're going to kick out Scheer, and then hopefully on a wing and a prayer, somebody like Pete Buttigieg is going to come in and replace him?
That's an element.
Like,
but I mean, we could have
bit,
the names I've
a
heard.
Bit of wishful thinking, man. It seems just as likely that the person you're going to have come out of nowhere is going to be another Maxime Bernier style flirt with the alt-right populist.
Well, Max went crazy pretty much after the leadership campaign.
Oh, no, I acknowledge that. But I'm saying someone like him is more likely to gain traction in a leadership review in this particular moment than somebody who's, you know, more moderate and more with it than Andrew
I think
Scheer.
What conservatives are looking for is a very competent prosecutorial leader, someone that can take on Trudeau, but also showcase a modern vision, someone that has some guts and someone that has some empathy. And so that person could be Christy Clark. That person could be Brad Wall. That person could be James Moore. That person could be a Pete Buttigieg. But time will tell. But we're seeing really smart people come up in Ontario and do really well. Like if you look at how well Stephen Lecce is performing for the Ford government, these people are out there. They just need to have an opportunity to put their names forward.
Can I suggest that the Conservative Party of Canada's problem goes beyond Andrew Scheer? You know, I think there is, I mean, you know, to Jen's point, yes. I mean, I don't know that you had the front bench talent that is going to make that leadership race absolutely pop. I think she's right. But also, you know, it's not as though other people on the campaign were doing an amazing job and Scheer was just the lone lame duck there. What ideas are is your party based on right now? I mean, you know, I think Stephen Harper, elected in 2006, ran as a reformer. Here's how we clean up government. You know, Brian Mulroney was, you know, the get people to work prime minister. Like, you know, the conservatives of the past have had a reason for running. I'm not sure I understand what the Conservative Party's like raising debt right now is beyond get rid of Justin Trudeau.
I think it should always be get people working. And whether you're out west and you're hurting, we need to tell people that we can get people working. And in Ontario, when we see wages stagnant for many years, when we see affordability issues with housing and public transit, we need to get people jobs, make life easier and more affordable and better. And I think that's the aspirational issues that we need to be talking about.
But so much of that has sort of fallen onto a handful of things like get rid of the carbon tax. And I think Ontario Proud, Canada Proud has been really instrumental in building that case of the carbon tax is the devil. You got to get rid of it. Everything will be rosy and functional afterwards. Is this the memification of the Conservative Party to some degree? You know, I didn't hear the Conservative Party actually doing a good pitch for...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Back to work jobs. I heard we'll get rid of the carbon tax. Once Trudeau is gone, everyone will have a job and there'll be a car in every driveway.
Yeah, and I agree. I think the mistake is that the Conservatives talk about the carbon tax too much.
Well, you talk about the carbon tax too much.
Yeah, but that's in the absence of others talking about other issues. I'd rather be talking about cell phone bills. If I was going to run a national campaign, and I told people this I've told people this for a long time, we should be talking about cell phone bills. This is the biggest thing we could talk about, full force. If a Conservative leader was smart, they would do press conferences in front of Rogers and Bell and TELUS and attack them. I think it would be a great look for a Conservative leader.
But you run a third-party advertising group that carries an enormous amount of sway and has a very substantial budget. You have the power to run ads. You have the power to hold press conferences. Why haven't you done that? Why are you focusing so damn hard on the carbon tax? I mean, not to mention you've also gone hard on immigration levels. I mean, you've gone after Trudeau personally. I mean,
we've never gone after immigration levels.
Yes, you did. Want me to pull up the meme? You were warning Canadians that the Trudeau government was going to raise immigration levels to 350,000 people
okay.
a year.
Sorry.
40% hike, and you... Yeah, you did. I mean, you run ads on immigration, the carbon. I mean, you have the power to change things. Isn't it weird for you to kind of sit on the sidelines and say the Tory party
we
has
have,
to
but
do
we
better?
Have talked about cell phone bills.
Yeah.
But we can only do so much. We do not control the whole political media discourse of the country. And we need to be able to amplify and echo what's already going on. If we're alone in it, it's a lot more challenging.
But you do control the discourse that's coming out of your own pages.
Yeah.
Right. Like it may not be on you entirely to shift the conservative movement's view on things like, I don't know, environmentalism or cell phone bills. But I mean, you have that ability to, you know, add a little bit more depth to some of the memes and pages that you do have. Sure.
Yeah. And that's a fair criticism. And that's something we could be doing better. I'm not saying Canada Proud is perfect. We should be. There's lots of things I want to be doing better. But it's also about resources and about how we can best defeat the Liberals. And in certain cases, that's echoing voices and sentiments already out there.
A big part of Andrew Scheer's election campaign was defeat the Liberals at all costs. whatever ideology we end up running on, right wing, center right, centrist, as long as we beat Trudeau, that's all that really matters. That's also been kind of a hallmark of the Ontario Canada Proud sort of strategy over the last couple of years. You're not really an idea factory, you're a beat the Liberals factory.
Yeah, we're not a think tank. If you want a think tank, start a think tank or look to the Fraser Institute or a litany of others. If you want to talk about, we are a third-party advertiser, that's what it was meant to be, and that's what it was set up to be, and that's what it primarily is.
And I remember I ran into you at a Christmas party like 4 years ago, and you had just started Ontario Proud, and I said, oh, I like this. It's a fun meme page to discuss conservative policies. We're at a point now where you put things out like a meme that reads, the problem is not that Trudeau is an incompetent, entitled, lying, virtue-signaling, backstabbing, fake idiot who has no business leading the country. The problem is that his supporters don't care. Is that help? Like, is this helpful? Like, is this good? Like, is this a thing that we're happy about that is being pushed out by a well-funded third-party
advertiser? If someone said
this
about Donald
country?
Trump, would you care?
Is Justin Trudeau Donald Trump?
I think he's... Listen, I'm not a Donald Trump fan, but I don't like Justin Trudeau, and there's a lot of people that agree with me. And
right.
That speaks to them, and it speaks... And if someone's seeing that scrolling through their Facebook page, I think it's fair criticism.
But is it, what criticism? What?
Well, like, wouldn't you, if you replace that with Donald Trump, you would be fine with it, right?
I'm not sure that I would. And also, Donald Trump is not Justin Trudeau.
You're right, but I think he's still bad for Canada.
But... Do you think you're helping democracy?
Yes. We need more voices saying different things. We are a player in the spectrum. We are not the only player.
Do you think you're constructive?
Yes. We're trying to defeat liberals. Yes.
That's inherently not constructive.
I think so. I don't like bad politicians. And I think it's good if there's people on the left trying to defeat politicians they think are bad, too.
It just strikes me as kind of interesting because, I mean, you're focusing on, you know, we're the defeat the liberals machine. I'm fundamentally doing what I believe in doing, and I'm serving democracy by defeating somebody I disagree with. Okay, but how does any of this qualify you to be a conservative kingmaker? It seems to me like you are so focused on and laser focused on defeating the baddies in your conception. That's fine. You have you're totally entitled to be that guy to do that thing. But, you know, you don't seem super passionate about policy, and you don't seem super passionate about getting behind a leader that you actually care about or think could do a really good job running the country. That's not what I hear from you. So why are you the best guy or a good guy to sort of topple Scheer?
Because I do fundamentally believe in free markets and free people. I'm not a policy expert. I want solutions that fit those two parameters. That's what I want. I'm not a policy expert. I don't claim to be. I'd rather bring in people who are policy experts to develop political platforms.
Like, you're a fighter. You're on the trenches of this political battle, and you're basically the street fighter. I get that. And like, I get in a democratic system why we would need people like that. I mean, and the liberals have street fighters too. Everybody has sort of partisan street fighters. Cool. I mean, I'm using probably torturing this analogy. But why does the street fighter think himself a good guy to decide whether or not Scheer should be able to continue on as leader? Like, what qualifies you to make that position?
But it's
from
me amongst many people. And I'm playing a role for this Conservative Victory Group. I'm not the only person on it. And we're not even running a candidate. It's about getting Scheer out of the way so we can have more ideas come through.
No, but answer the question, which Street Fighter character are you?
back, left. Fireball.
Let me ask you this. If we didn't have Ontario Proud and Canada Proud and Press Progress and all of these sort of partisan outlets that are either meme pages or fake think tanks or fake websites or whatever, do you think we would be better off as a country or worse?
Worse. I think we need more voices, not fewer.
But doesn't it matter what those voices are saying? And let's bring it back to Andrew Scheer. You know,
but why do people get to decide what voices?
I'm not getting to decide. I'm not deciding. I'm not saying we should shut you down.
I think he's actually trying to guilt you into quitting, Jeff.
Jen, you're giving away the plot. No, but quit earnestly. I mean, you know, for the conservative members who are still kind of on the fence about Scheer, you know, who might not appreciate the campaign that he ran, but who aren't sure there's anything better on the other side, would it not be helpful to give them a vision of, you know, what you think the Conservative Party should be, or what your donors or whatever? Do you not think it's worth advocating or advancing an idea of what the Conservative Party could be?
And when it comes to a leadership candidate, that's what we'll do. But right now it's about Scheer is harming the party. We need a healthy race. And if Scheer wants to run again, he should run. But we need a healthy race where new voices and new ideas can emerge.
Because generally it feels like your outfit, I mean, you know, you are funded by increasingly, I know small donors, but a handful of big corporate donors, you use the apparatus you've built to go after people. I mean, that's fundamentally, you go after Trudeau, you're going after Scheer now.
But so let's be clear, the Prouds are staying.
But you also have a lot of great memes about like bagged milk and how lovely maple syrup is. So like, let's be fair here.
The Prouds are also staying neutral in this campaign.
Yeah, but I mean, you are part of the Proud apparatus. I mean,
sure.
You're the brain master. Is that a word?
No.
Okay.
So you're not going to use the Proud Network to try and mobilize any of the members to vote against Scheer during the leadership review, if it comes to that?
No.
Why not?
Well, one, there'd be a disagreement amongst, listen, there's a board of directors with Canada Proud. I can't control it all. And I think there'd be a disagreement on that. I also think Canada Proud's role, that's not what Canada Proud is about, is getting involved in internal conservative battles.
But to keep kind of harping on this, the Conservative Party needs to figure out what kind of Conservative Party it wants to be in the 21st century, right? Especially in the second decade of the 21st century, which is, I'm told, where we are now. Does it have to change substantially? It kind of sounds like you're saying, oh, no, all we need is a funny guy who can sell the same things that Scheer was saying. I mean, do you need a party that, you know, does actually have a sensible environmental platform, you know, is cool with queer people, you know, is finally putting the abortion thing to rest? Like, where do you think this Conservative Party should be? Do you even care?
Well, one, I think if we had a better leader last time, we would have won the last election, right? But that's also
even with kind of saying all the same things, doing all the same things, if it had been a different face, you think you would have won?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, does that mean I think the party needs to change too? Yeah. I also think the party needs to modernize its approach for the long term. I think we need to be inclusive. We need to be talking to ethnic communities and making sure we're not alienating urban women and doing all the other things that need to be done. We need to figure out a way to talk about climate change in a more sensible way for the long term. There's a litany of things that need to be improved.
But don't you think you've incentivized talking about climate change in the stupidest way possible? I mean, and I mean this quite genuinely. You put out memes that kind of say, you know, carbon tax is not a environmental platform, it's actually counterproductive, it's a tax grab, yada, yada, yada. You've created a feedback loop where saying bad things about the carbon tax gets donations and likes and shares and people angry online, and it doesn't leave room to incentivize people to come out and say, here's a thoughtful, sensible alternative.
But we can't be all things to all people, and you're not. You're acting.
But you're doing a bad thing.
No, but I think Canada Proud isn't a political party.
Yeah,
and so we're not going to have all the solutions to problems, and we should look to political parties and policy experts to find those solutions.
But you're doing a bad thing.
We're an attack dog that attacks bad ideas and bad politicians, right?
Right.
And I think the left has had them. The unions outspent Canada Proud, 9-1 last election? And they're able to run vicious ads and, you know, but I'm, hey, but, say, at least I'm transparent. Yeah. I'm on this podcast. Would anyone from Unifor come on here? Absolutely not.
Oh, we haven't asked. We should probably ask at some point.
I apologize if this is a Unifor shop. Solidarity yeah. forever.
At least the unions are out there saying, what do we not want? Layoffs, because we have members, we don't want them laid off. What do we want? More investment in public services. You can disagree with that, but you know, they are a membership-driven organization. You know, they have elections for their board. They are pretty upfront about what they want, what they don't want. Your organization is, you know, former Conservative Party staffers for the most part, taking money from private corporations to run ads that are largely in lockstep with the Conservative Party. Do you not think there's a difference there? I mean, not that it's necessarily one is good, the other's bad. I actually think they're both to a large degree bad. But do you not recognize that there is a difference there?
But when you look at the actual content that these groups put out, they're identical.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they attack Scheer, they attack Doug Ford, and you know, there's a lot of mean-spirited stuff in there.
And so, yeah, Unifor might claim certain policy objectives, but when it comes down to the political aspect of it, they fight like we do.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here with you a little bit, Justin, not to get Jeff totally off the hook for being the baddie, but to some extent, people can choose to contribute to the Proud Network if they want to, whereas, for example, the unions, for the most part, the people who are join them have to join them in order to take the jobs that they do, and the contributions are forced, and then that income then goes to partisan funding. So you could make an argument for one being a baddie or the other being a baddie or both being the baddie. So I'm not sure that the unions are quite as lily white as you're playing it.
Listen, I'm not going to guilt you into shutting Ontario Proud down. I've accepted that. Can I at least suggest that Ontario Proud could be a vehicle for something more positive than the rancor and vitriol that you've created on your platform thus far?
I don't listen. I'm I disagree with that premise. But I also
disagree all you want.
But no, listen, there's a lot of things I would love to do with more resources, right?
I'm not giving you any more money. I'm tithing
capped,
enough.
Justin, we capped you
I'm gonna
off.
Look
no
you up in our nation, brother. No, there's lots of things I want to be doing, and that's the thing is I'm not only, my ideas don't end at Canada Proud and Ontario Proud, and yeah. What I want to contribute to Canada and to political discourse and business, they extend beyond that. And so Canada Proud has its role; it is an attack dog. But I think you're right. There's other things that I would like to be doing through that vehicle, but there's also other things I want to be doing through other vehicles, and that includes being more positive and proactive.
What I'm hearing from you is that Canada Proud is the first of your foundation blocks in the empire that you choose to build around.
I started Ontario Proud and then Canada Proud because they were the logical next steps, and then it was an opportunity in the market that I could do.
And you expect to grow your influence and power base from there?
That seems really egotistical.
Are you running for leader?
No, I'm
Is
never...
this all a scheme to get out, sheer out so you can run?
No. No, I never listen. I don't like. I'm not Jen. I don't view myself in that regard. I'm just doing. I like to do cool things, like things I like to be doing, and that's kind of why I like having my own business and having the freedom to do cool things and think about cool things, and that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And so there's things. I'm not some grandiose visionary thinker where I think 10 years down the road or even a year or two. It's what can I do next that I would enjoy that I think I can be good at.
Okay. I hope it is more positive because, and I've told you this privately before, I think you're hurting democracy and I want you to stop hurting it so much.
Okay.
That's my little...
That's okay, Justin. I'm okay if you don't like me all the time.
This episode is also brought to you by Audible. Audible has the best audiobook performances, the largest library, and the most exclusive content curated by and for Canadians. Now, if you were depressed by Justin's suggestion last week, might I suggest this monumental work by Friedrich Hayek, one of the thought leaders of the Austrian School of Economics and one of our greatest defenders of classical liberalism, The Road to Serfdom, the definitive edition. It is an unimpeachable classic work in political philosophy, intellectual and cultural history, and economics. The Road to Serfdom has inspired and infuriated politicians, scholars, and the public for half a century. Originally published in 1944, when Eleanor Roosevelt supported the efforts of Stalin, and Albert Einstein subscribed lock, stock, and barrel to the socialist program, The Road to Serfdom was seen as heretical for its passionate warning against the dangers of state control over the means of production. For Hayek, the collectivist idea of empowering government with increasing economic control would lead not to a utopia, but to the horrors of Nazi Germany and fascist Italy. Start a 30-day trial and your first Audible book is free. Learn more at audible.ca/Canada. That's audible.ca/CANADA.
So, Jen, last weekend I was in Nova Scotia for the Halifax Security Forum, and I got the chance to sit down with Figo Chen and Emily Lau, two Hong Kong pro-democracy figures who accepted the John McCain Prize for Leadership from the forum. Lau is a former chairwoman of the Democratic Party, while Chen is one of the protesters who is organized in the streets of Hong Kong for weeks. I spoke to them just a couple days before President Trump signed the Hong Kong Democracy and Human Rights Act into law. Basically, the law would have just required some regular reporting about whether or not China is actually respecting Hong Kong's independence, and would have given them the option to sanction individual Chinese officials or Hong Kong officials if they've been found violating human rights or basic democratic principles. So, a pretty reasonable act, all in all. And I managed to confirm last week that the Trudeau government has zero interest in adopting anything similar, which, frankly, is a disgrace. I 100% accept that Canada can't fix the rest of the world, but I do think this government's absolute feckless, spineless toadiness to China on this file is abhorrent.
Isn't it an interesting contrast from where we were a couple of years ago, where the Trudeau government was trying to claim that Canada had lost its role as an honest broker and that we were going to be back on the world stage, we were going to get a seat at the totally useless and pointless UN Security Council, and now we can't even engage in the most perfunctory and symbolic of acts toward Hong Kong. It's pretty amazing to me.
Honest broker, it turns out, just means absolute kowtowing hand-wringer. So anyway, I wanted to play a bit of this interview so you can actually hear two of the people most impacted by China's crackdown of the protesters there and listen to them demand something better from the Prime Minister.
China has done a very good job, especially over the last decade, of lobbying, convincing politicians around the world to take a more friendly stance towards China. It, up until recently, hasn't been incredibly effective, apart from now the President of the United States repeatedly says that President Xi is his friend and counts him as an ally. Is that discouraging?
There are people in public office, whether it's in government or in parliament or in business, they want to make money. So they want, you know, China is a big pot of gold, and they want to go in and get it. And so in the process, other things, you know, have to play second fiddle. So we know that. And of course, it's very disappointing. And China knows that they know the weaknesses or the wants of these people, and they satisfy them. So it's not easy. But then I talked to the audience here, I said, you have your values. So those things should matter too. I mean, I have nothing against people doing business. But it's not that when you do business, you betray your own values. That's all. But if you do business, but you still stick to those things, and get China to do it. And I also mentioned the importance of reciprocity, which is a very fair thing. When they come here, the whole place is very open. And they get access to all kinds of things, whether they're journalists, whether they're academics, the business people. They get access because it's open society. But when you go there, you don't. And you don't complain. You accept it. So they feel very happy. They come and get everything. So they think you're fools. So why should you do that? I'm not asking you to sanction them. I'm asking you to demand the same treatment. And if you can push China to act in a more civilized way, it will be good for the whole world. It's just that in the past, people have spoiled China.
It feels like one of the most effective strategies against China recently has been the images coming from Hong Kong. The protesters have done a fantastic job of getting photos, images out, and you know, making their voices heard online and through the media in a way that, unfortunately, you know, maybe the Tibetan or the Uyghur cause hasn't.
They can't do it.
Yeah.
You can't go in. 他問你這個是不是可以這樣做，是不是幫到 鼓勵了一些抗爭者.
Hong Kong can do that is because Hong Kong has some freedom. Yesterday, the 加拿大那個說叫不要支持香港.
Oh, the ambassador here, the Chinese ambassador here, told the Canadians not to support Hong Kong.
I think that's a good thing for all the people, the world, know more about the mainland China and know more about what they did. You can see that they don't want to give the freedom for the people, and they don't want to give the power for the people. That is the main point. We can not just hope government can give freedom to us. We should just fighting for our freedom, for our democracy. That is sleeping tiger, and now it's wake up.
The Tibetans and the Uyghurs, you can't see it. Although actually the number involved much bigger. Some say 3 million now in Xinjiang. Yeah. I don't know. But you can't see nothing. So how can people be moved and be immobilized? So in a way, Hong Kong is still lucky because there's that freedom.
And those images, I think, have contributed to the U.S. House and Senate introducing that bill, passing it with only one vote against.
Yeah.
And it's led to all of the support. You haven't seen that in Canada, and definitely not in the UK. The Canadian government, even though it's still, you know, squaring off against China, has not been as vocal as US legislators.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like they are heeding the warning from the Chinese ambassador to stay out.
Yeah.
Does Canada, the UK, Germany, everybody else need to do more?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, that's why I hope the Prime Minister would have some guts and a sense of dignity and courage. Not just to speak out for us. These are universal values. So he should speak out. I'm not against Canada trading with China. I'm not against Halifax selling lobsters to China. No.
Yeah.
But you can also say, hey, okay, I'll trade with you, whatever, but I also want to talk about human rights. And I hope you will not, you know, violate the human rights of your people. So I hope they'll do it. And I think the Chinese probably were worried that after American Congress has passed the law, they fear that something similar may happen here. That's why they spoke out yesterday.
回应嘛, Yes.
So he thinks the police
yeah.
would listen to your prime minister's words. And well, I think that whether it's the Chinese government, Hong Kong government, or the Hong Kong police, they all listen.
Yes.
But and if the international community leaders speak out, of yes. course they listen. Because China cares about face.
Yes.
If you internationally, at every occasion, you keep bringing this up, you keep mentioning it, they will be embarrassed. Just on the reverse, if nobody talks about Hong Kong, because they meet a lot of foreign dignitaries, mm-hmm. if every time they have a meeting, nobody talks about Hong Kong, now that would be bad news.
That's it for Oppo this week. Tell us what you think. Your feedback sustains our souls. Email oppo@canadalandshow.com or tweet us at OppoCast. And go like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like us, rate us and leave a review. Maybe we'll even read them on air and we can get into a fight.
What I thought would be nice, Jen, is that if we finally got on someone who we've been asking to join us for quite some time, it would be nice if the Prime Minister finally had, you know, the courage to come sit down and chat with us.
It will never happen, Justin. He's just not brave enough. And he's certainly not brave enough to face you.
It won't happen unless people get organized. So I'm saying right now, hashtag come on Oppo, you coward. I'm not going to spell that for you. Figure it out. Come on Oppo, you coward. You can make it happen.
While you're at it, also renew Anne with an E. Kabla and Oppo, you coward, and renew Anne with an E. Go on Twitter. Let's make this happen, kids.
How much does Ontario Proud cost? Can we get them involved in this? Anyway, this episode was produced by Laura Howells and David Crosby. Our managing editor is Kevin Sexton, and the theme music was by Nathan Burley.
I have the last word this week, and that word is blue. It's the only thing that came into my brain.
Hey, it's Matea, reminding you that this show cannot be made without you. If you've been thinking about becoming a Canada Land supporter, we're having a pretty great sale right now. You'll get premium ad-free feeds of all Canada Land shows, discounts on merch from our store, and exclusive bonus episodes, like a behind-the-scenes tour of the federal budget lockup, more of Boris Johnson's trip to Canada, and of course, more of us yapping about what's hot in politics right now. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a Canada Land supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special offer for our listeners. Sign up now for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Listen up, true crime fans.
There's a big murder trial underway.
Dateline is launching a new podcast with Andrea Canning.
Welcome to Dateline True Crime Weekly.
We'll cover breaking crime news around the country with the best reporters on the case, NBC News analysts, and Dateline producers on the ground.
Over. Break it down for us.
You'll get behind-the-scenes scoops from crime scenes to courtrooms.
So tell us what he said.
Listen to Dateline True Crime Weekly now and catch new episodes every Thursday.
Wherever you get your podcasts.